All right, y'all, what's going on? What's going on? Welcome back to your favorite WMMA podcast, hashtag CB99 Talks. Of course, I'm Combo Breaker 99. Back with another one, guys. Back with another episode. Couldn't leave yet. You know, like I said, I got some things going on, but still had to come through and do episode this week because I got time. You know, I'm still trying to, you know, just keep moving on, keep moving along. Not like everything is good, but, you know, I mean, I feel good and everything is, you know, all right. So, you know, I'm just trying to continue to stay in the mix and be active because that's just how I am. You know, I like to be active and, you know, I don't like to just sit around. So, yeah, we back with another one, guys. And, you know, there's always something to talk about in the world of combat sports, specifically WMMA. That's what we're here to talk about, y'all. But, yeah, like I said, what I had to do, you know, the past couple of days, you know, I'm still been, you know, doing what I need to do, checkup and things like that, a doctor's appointment. So, yeah, before we jump into it, yeah, I'll give you a quick update on me, and then we'll talk about the Bellator fight between, you know, Abzeragova and Lara this weekend. We'll talk about that. Some of the boxing, you know, women's boxing had a pretty good night this past Saturday. And also, you know, I want to talk about I just want to, you know, kind of discuss the striking of Santos and Blanchfield a little bit as we get closer to the fight, because their fight is not this weekend, but the following weekend. So, you know, I want to just talk about the striking aspect of both of these fighters real quick. And then, you know, let's talk about Valentina Shevchenko and her path to her eighth Ruby on her belt. You know, will she get it? And I just want to, you know, take a look at that belt real quick, you know, go through these title defenses about Valentina Shevchenko. It's fight week. We got one fight again, Elise Reed versus Loma Labutny. So, yeah, we can kind of go ahead and give our picks if we want. All right. So, yeah, man. Pretty good weekend of fights, you know, as far as just a mixture of MMA and boxing. I mean, UFC card started late, so I was in and out on it. I was looking at it while I was still grinding, but, you know, it wasn't all, you know, all that great of a card either, you know, it's in my opinion. So I was just, you know, really looking forward to the Mandy Boehm and Jin Young Kim fight, but of course that didn't take place. So anyways, yeah, as far as me, man, my update, like I said, you know, I got some things going on medically, you know, I need to get taken care of. And, you know, I got the answers I needed Monday, of course. And, you know, I'm going to be having a little procedure done on Friday. So, yeah, it's a quick one. That's first step to something else, you know. So hopefully this thing, you know, will lead to better things from here. You know, of course it does, having this done, what I need done, right? So when I get this done, you know, I got to move forward with something else to make sure everything else is good with me. So, yeah, I'm going to have that done Friday. And I'll be home by then, you know, and I'll be out of work for a week, you know, so in recovery for a week. So y'all probably still hear from me throughout my recovery week because I'm going to be chilling. You know, I really have to chill on this one. I can't do any workouts or anything like that. So I'm kind of feeling like a fighter right now. You know, I feel like a fighter right now because I had a race coming up that I was training for in March, but training is off. So I got to pull out of my own match coming up in March. So that sucks. So with that pull out, I can, you know, definitely see how fighters feel. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I've already experienced boxing and racing and all of that. And, you know, you can kind of feel the mental pressure sometimes. You know, when I was younger doing that, you'd feel like the mental pressure, certain things. But I was really taking racing seriously, you know. So having to pull out of one that, you know, I was going to train for this year, it kind of feels like, oh, man, you know, mentally, like, dang, I was preparing for something. Now that's knocked out of the way. I'm kind of like, now what, you know? And on top of that, you know, I can't get any workouts in, you know, because I'm going to be on, you know, light movement for the next month and a half, you know? So no running, no workouts for a good 6 weeks, you know? So, yeah, that's going to kind of suck for me because, you know, I got to be moving sometimes, you know, I got to be moving. But yeah, it'll be all right though. Like, that's just like, to me, like, I ain't really worried about anything else except that. I just show you how serious I take of being, you know, into my running now, in my racing. And I'm just kind of like, man, damn, now I know how these fighters feel. Like, when a fighter has to pull out of a fight, that's why I'm like, gonna be very, very careful how I, you know, put a fighter down, or, you know, how I question a fight. I ain't even gonna put a fighter down, but how I question a fighter when they pull out of a fight. Cause you got to understand, they got to feel bad. Like, there's certain situations that you just can't help. You know, when you have to be under the knife and you have to have surgery, believe me, some of these fighters, they would rather be in the ring. They'd rather be in the cage because, you know, surgery is not, you know, it's not a fun thing. You know, it can go wrong in them things, you know, and then you got to work. You got to understand that you got to recover, and you possibly won't be in the cage or ring for another 8 months. So you have to go through therapy and all of that. So I don't, you know, when it comes down to like fighters pulling out for surgery, you know, I'm not going to disrespect them from now on and say, oh, they're ducking or they're trying to be a coward or anything like that. You know, people would just be a stupid when they do that. That's why I never do. But, you know, being in that situation now, like, just feeling like I have to pull out of this big one I was going to do, this big race I was going to do, I'm like, damn, you know, it's like mentally kind of messing with you because your mind was in preparation mode and now it's out of your control. Like, your body's out of your control. Like, and the thing is, I'm not sick or anything. I don't feel sick, but what I have could lead to something like that. That's why I'm just like, that makes it even worse because I'm 100%, feel 100% right now. You know, I just got done running now, which, you know, this is my last one in. It's my last one in before I can, you know, run again. So last one in before, you know, I get my work done, and then, you know, I'll be out of it for like six and a half weeks. So yeah, I'll be good after this though. Like I said, throughout the week, I'll probably be on and off the channel, of course, depending on, you know, how I feel. If I want to be on, but I like being on, you know, I like jumping on here and discussing stuff like this, whether people are in the chat or talking to me or not, you know, I'm going to be on here and discuss it because y'all come back and comment anyway. So yeah, that's what it is, guys. Having that done Friday, so probably won't be on for a Friday show, but yeah, I'll probably be on for a Saturday or Sunday one. Cause yeah, I'm going to be laid back. I'm going to be laid back with the phone in my hand and the laptop in my hand. So I got to find something to keep myself occupied, right? Even if I'm gaming a little bit, worried about gaining weight now, you know, worried about gaining some weight now that I'm gonna be out of it for a while. But nah, we'll find something to do, man. We'll find something to do to keep that weight off. But yeah, man. Like I said, not much going on this weekend. Like I said, this past weekend we had a pull out due to an illness and Mandy Boehm. So I didn't even go in on her. You know, I didn't even try to go in. You know, I was upset the fight didn't happen because we wanted the WMMA fight. But Mandy had to pull out. You know, that's on her. You know, whatever was going on, hey, I can't say anything about it. They're going to reschedule the fight. I know it's not a fight everybody's looking forward to, but it's a fight that has to answer questions for these two. You know, Mandy Boehm has got to get back into the mix. So does Kim. They're on the chopping block. Enough said, right? But, yeah, we had some good boxing matches. Shout out to Amanda Serrano and Alicia Baumgartner, both undisputed, both topped the card. Alicia was co-main, Serrano was main event, and they put it all on the line. You know, picked up some vacant titles and picked up a, you know, championship title. put on good performances. Alicia Baumgartner was in there, you know, bombing the girl, Mekhled, and could have stopped during the third round, dropped it two times, but the girl has a chin, the girl has heart, came back, fought a good fight. Baumgartner kind of started to slow down towards the end of the in mid part of the fight and tail end in the fight. But the thing I like about Baumgartner is she stays sharp. Like, she stopped boxing using her legs, and she started to get winded, but she started keeping her guard tight and she started throwing harder. And that's what you got to do, man. Like, once you start to lose your legs, you got to tighten your defense up and you got to start throwing harder. You got to make them shots count. I like how Baumgartner boxed early, was landing beautiful right hands, but as she got winded, she started tightening the guard up and she started fighting harder in the pocket, landing some vicious body shots and left hooks on Mekhled, knocking her around. Mekhled landed some good punches too, some good right hands. Couldn't really do any damage on Baumgartner, but fought a good fight, showed a lot of resilience. So yeah, shout out to Baumgartner snatching up those belts. Serrano also put on a solid performance. She fought a good fighter in Melissa Cruz. Yes, first name right, Melissa Cruz. You know, Cruz fought a very spirited fight, but very predictable fight. That's why I don't understand how Serrano was losing like some of the first couple rounds. You know, there was a lot of moments where Cruz is just dipping low, body, body, head, head, body, body, head, head. You know, every time Serrano was stepping her range, she fired these hooks off. She was doing a lot of hooks. So Serrano, to me, being the southpaw, should have just been pumping a simple jab out, stealing them early rounds. But as the fight went on, Cruz gassed herself out. Serrano played a good rope-a-dope game to let her gas herself out and started, you know, landing the crisper, sharper punches. Almost had Cruz out. Almost had Cruz out. You know, a lot of blood in this fight from a headbutt. But yeah, Serrano took the fight. Won the fight. I'd say she won it probably like 7-3, 6-4, because I had to give like three or four of the first half rounds of it for Cruz. But yeah, good performances. I like what these ladies are doing for boxing. What's good about Serrano's situation is, you know, she's really been pushing for the best fights. I mean, now she just fought for Undisputed. Now she's going right back into a fight with Katie Taylor in May. So that shows you like 3 months from now that how serious she is. Like, these ladies, they're not taking any BS fights. Like, they are staying on it. They're not showing any diva intentions. They really want to fight the best fights out there. And I got to give them credit. Now, some people might knock them and say, oh, this women's boxing, the pickings are slim. But, well, that still doesn't matter. They're still fighting the best. Because, I mean, if the pickings were slim, the promoters like Eddie Hearn and so on, they would try to pad their records, find other women just to kind of overrate them and pad their records that way and build them up, right? And just keep building just to kind of make money off of them. But no, they're making the best fights for them. They got to make Shields Marshall. They got to make Taylor Serrano regardless, right? Because that's what people want anyways. Like, same with boxing. Like, the situations with some of your champions, yeah, we have four or five undisputed men, but sometimes it takes a while to get there. See, with the women, they've been pushing it. You know, they're like, I want this belt, I want that belt. Like, the men, they can be in that same position. Like, because even with men, we don't want to see them fight BS fights either. There's more men out there, but still, some of these fights don't make sense, right? You know, they still don't make sense. So they still have to follow the same path. The women, they just have less, but they still want to do it. You know, they still want to go ahead and make for the best fight. Even running it back, like Taylor Serrano, there is no other talk. They wanted to fight. I mean, Serrano fought fights in between, but let me see. How many fights did she fight in between? Because it's still like, it was still in a timely manner how she did it. Because let's see, Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor fought last year, right? But in the meantime, you know, they fought a couple fights in between, but they want to get right back in there and do it. Right. You know, in the meantime, you know, Serrano fought an undisputed fight. So that was still, you know, something of legit. That was still legit for her. OK, April 30th last year. Right. She lost April 30th last year. And since then, she fought two more fights. And now she's coming back in May. So a year and a month later. Right. And that's how it usually works out with a rematch. They usually revisit after a couple fights in between. Shoot, that's how Santos and Shevchenko should do, you know, just about a year later, come back again. So that was just a little off topic. But, yeah, that's how they should do it. But, yeah, Katie Taylor, I believe she has a fight coming up, too. Let's see. Yeah, No. Katie Taylor's coming right back in May. Yeah, because Katie Taylor fought once after the fight with Serrano, and now she's coming right back. Yeah, Serrano actually fought two in between. Okay, so yeah. Shout out to these ladies though. They want to run it back. You know, even Alicia Baumgartner's entertaining Michaela Mayer's fight. You know, Michaela Mayer's supposed to fight one other fight, but yeah, even Alicia Baumgartner, she wants to do it again. So I like that energy. You know, keep on. You know, wanting to fight the best fights. She was. You know, she always wanted to fight the best fights. She wanted to become undisputed in several weight classes, and she did it. You know, she did it. So, got to give these ladies credit too, man. They want to fight the best fights out there. You know, the men, they do as well. Like, you know, Jermell Charlo, Devin Haney, he's undisputed. Jermell is undisputed. Who else is undisputed out there? In a way, he's an undisputed champion. Canelo, he's an undisputed champion. You know, in this four belt era, so you got four, right? But then you have Spence and Crawford still don't want to hold up, you know, for whatever reason. And that's the biggest fight out there. Better be a Bivol, you know, they're kind of pushing that fight off. Better be a still has another fight to go before he can fight Bivol, you know? So that's where people kind of get pissed off. Like there's these other fights out there that they're okay competition, but there's better fights that can be made. You know what I mean? Like for, you know, your light heavyweight or welterweight supremacy. All right. So yeah, man, boxing was pretty solid this weekend, in my opinion. Bellator 290, we only had this fight between Laura and Afzal Gova. And this is kind of what I wanted to talk about in this episode, in this topic, is urgency and adapting, man. This was a perfect time for it to come up again because, you know, Laura is the type of fighter to me, has a lot of good skill sets, has a lot of natural abilities that I can see in there. That she just needs to really fully use her the best of her ability, but she just doesn't do it enough. You know, she has power, she's strong, and she has a chin, and those are things you can't teach too. Like she has three things you can't really teach. Like, well, you can build up strength, but she has natural strength, like as far as like durability and resilience, and just getting stronger in a fight. She has that. And she has a great chin and power. Like some of those things you can't really like build up and teach like that. That's why I'm like impressed with those three things. But then I get disappointed with the lack of IQ with her. You know, in this fight, I believe she won it. I watched it twice and I believe she won it convincingly. But there was too many moments where she was letting Afzal Gova get off on her. And I'm looking at this girl that's 5-0 and she's got like over 20 fights, right? I believe like 19 and 6. This girl, 20-some fights, should be able to show her a thing or two. But that just shows you how, even in her 20 fights, some of the losses that she has been showing that a lack of IQ, right? You would think that somebody with that many fights be able to school somebody like Afzal Gova, who's only 5-0 in this fight. But in this situation, she wasn't able to because the same reason she lost these other three, four fights is the same reason she lost this one. Not completely committing to what she's built for, and what she possesses, right? This should have been a fight where Laura should have been putting a lot of pressure on, staying in that pocket, getting into the clinch, staying in the chest to Afzal Gova, taking her down and out wrestling and out grappling. Because I believe her grappling game is better than Afzal Gova. Afzal Gova wanted to box in this fight, and that's what she did. She outboxed Laura a few times in the exchanges, landed some sharp right hands, snapping that head back. Laura landed some nice straight left hands as well, and some good combinations. But I think she let this girl get off too much on her, you know, one too many shots. Because the judges, they do look at blood sometimes. They'll look at damage and they'll go, okay, this girl's landing the better punches. Blood and hair. Let me just put it that way. Blood and hair. They were looking at that too, man, because I remember a fight a while back, Bernard Hopkins was calling, I believe, David Lemieux and Gennady Golovkin fight. And every time Golovkin would use that shotgun jab on David Lemieux's head, David Lemieux had this hairstyle where, you know, his hair was shaved around the sides. He had that long, like, what did they call it? I don't know what the cut is called, but it's like still long on the top and head shaved around the sides. So every time Golovkin's hitting him in the head, you know, with these sharp jabs, his hair would like, it would just like sway up in the air, like he took a lot of impact. Or even if like Golovkin would faint and he moves his head would like shoot up in the air. And or if Golovkin would come close to hitting him and he would pull back and barely miss, the hair would still react, right? The hair had a mind of its own. So the judges look at these things, like Bernard Hopkins said, but the judge is going to look at these things. And every time they see your hair like fly up in like a frantic manner, they score that as a hit. They're like, oh man, that's reacting. So that's kind of how Laura's hair was in this fight. You know, Laura got this big bush here instead of having it braided down. So every time, even like the right hands are just glancing on the cheek, the head looks like it's snapping back fully whenever Abzeragov is landing. Now she is landing these shots, but there's a few that land and it's a little bit more dramatic than the actual connection is, right? So that's another thing, like the damage and the hair is a big part of how the judges look at this fight too, right? But another thing that the judges look at here that you can fix yourself is urgency. You know, I think Laura needed to show that urgency early in this fight, that, you know, she really wanted to win this fight, that I'm a fighter on a 3-fight losing streak and I got to get in there and win. You know, she needed to be touching constantly instead of letting her opponent put the pressure on her and be first, right? So fighters like this, they need to look at that, the urgency. You know, urgency is something you come in with. You know, you got to say, oh man, like, you know, everything rides on this fight, so I got to be first with everything I'm doing. Not be reckless, but be ready to commit to the fight that you need to fight to win and make a big statement, right? You got to beat the judges and you got to beat your opponent. So you have to show that type of urgency that it's time to get our game plan going as fast as we can. And as our opponent comes at us, we have to adapt to the fight. You know, we have to adapt to this girl that wants to box. You know, we make her react, we make her faint, we make her do certain things. And if she's only doing these 1, 2, 3 things, we have to start adapting. Like when you come forward on her and she throws a couple pot shots and she turns angles, okay, she wants to box. You know, she's not even dropping her level trying to take us down, right? Or she's not countering with a tie clinch trying to, you know, reverse us to the cage and take us to the ground. Okay, so what do we do here? Okay, she wants to box, so let's feint a little bit. Let's shoot for legs, right? Let's start shooting for legs. Let's close distance and clinch fight, right? So that's what I need to see from Laura in that first round and even going into the second round. You landed the better combinations in the second round, won the round, but it would have been nice to top it off with a takedown or two and just adapt to the situation and say, okay, let's adjust here and start becoming more of a wrestler. You know, let's start wrestling the hell out of our opponent. And then the third round comes in. It's like we're 1-1. Let's get urgent now. You know, let's go in there and look for a knockout or finish, or let's put a lot of pressure on our opponent, take their work rate down and work. I mean, yeah, from the outside looking in, people are going to say, oh, you make it sound easy. Well, it should be for somebody that trained hard for a fight, right? Everything I'm saying is how the stuff should have played through, because that's how it's supposed to play through if you're a fighter, right? I'm just saying the ABCs and breaking down what you don't see. And that's just how it goes, right? Everything that you need is what I'm saying that you got to have in there, right? It's not like I'm saying you got to do the impossible, right? Like I'm saying you got to knock your opponent out, but you got to do something in there with urgency and the ability to adapt, okay? So it's not just Laura, but it's just this particular situation makes for a good example for this topic, right? Fighters that aren't even on losing streaks, you know, you just have to go in there and show some type of urgency to the judges and for yourself, you know, to stay ahead. You know, you got to take charge, get your game plan going, get your rhythm going, get your style going to stay ahead of your opponent. You know, of course you have a feel out round, but the majority of the time is you got to be on it, especially if you tie up, you got to be on it. You got to be ready to take full charge, do what you got to do to come out the winner in these fights, right? You know, another good example is like Jennifer Maia. Jennifer Maia has a lot of good tools about her, some of the best tools in the flyweight division, I think, in the top 5, top 10. But same thing with her. You know, she doesn't show urgency sometimes. She'll sit back, stay in one gear, doesn't make the right adjustments. You know, she won't adapt to what her opponent's doing to pull out the best weapon. And she'll kind of fall behind, right? So moving forward for somebody like Laura, you know, that's just something I think it has to be It can't really, I guess it can be taught, or it can be, it can't be taught. I think it has to be learned, if that makes sense, right? I know that probably won't make sense to people when I say it can't be taught. It has to be learned, right? Well, let's put it this way. When your parents try to teach you, let's say, okay, when your parents, you know, they teach you to be more, let's say your parents teach you to be punctual, right? Get up, brush your teeth on time, you know, get up in time to take a shower, get your clothes ready, eat breakfast so you can be out the door, get to school in a timely manner, right? So you won't be late every day, right? But you're being late. Okay, so let's say you are being late every day. You're tardy every day. Okay, maybe you need to get up 30 minutes early or an hour early, right? So, you know, you can you won't miss the bus anymore. Or you won't be hanging behind, you know, hanging out with your friends or getting to your locker too late, right? You know, you need, maybe you need to get up 30 minutes early, you know, or so you're not running out to the bus every day. All right, that's something they can teach you, but you still won't do it. You still won't do it. So, okay, well, the best thing that'll happen in this situation is you're going to have to learn it on your own by having after-school detention, having after-school detention for being late 3, 4, 5 times in a row. You know, if it's a pattern, or, you know, you're going to have to stand in class, right? I've done that before. I walked into class late a couple of times, and I had to stand. I had to stand the whole 90 minutes. I mean, it didn't hurt, but, you know, it kind of was like, dang, you know what I mean? I learned from that. But yeah, like, parents can teach you something, but if it doesn't stick and you don't want to be taught, all right, you'll learn it the hard way. And I think that's what it's going to come down to for Laura. Like, trainers, they can teach you everything. You can tell a person to do everything, but you're probably going to have to be learning it the hard way by getting knocked out of the rankings and getting cut, or, you know, catching a beat down every day. That's why I say in training, you can't really teach a fighter that urgency. You just got to learn by whooping that, you know, whooping up on them, whooping that behind up in there constantly to make it say, okay, dang, you know, let me wake up here. Let me wake up, show that urgency. Now I'm falling behind, I'm getting beat up in sparring. It's time to come back. Right. That's the type of sessions that somebody like Laura needs. I mean, maybe it's happening, maybe it's not. I don't know. But it's not purely changing. I mean, I think she won the fight clearly, but there were still moments in here where I think she could have won it even more convincingly, in my opinion. But yeah, that's what it is, man. Like, urgency, it's just something, you know, you have to have in these fights, especially if you on these losing streaks. You got to have that urgency. You got to be able to adapt to what your opponent is offering. You know, you got to do that. And she wasn't doing that. So fighters that want to learn, watch this fight. You know, fans that want to know what I'm talking about when it comes to urgency and adapting, this is the perfect example. Watch this, or watch 3 of her other fights, or watch some of Jennifer Maia's fights, okay? Watch Andrea Lee's fights. Those are like 3 perfect examples of fighters that I don't think adapt in situations, and they don't show enough urgency. They don't commit. Cabello, go back and watch them fighters, all right? Yeah. So, yeah, let me know what y'all think of that whole thing, you know. What's some examples for y'all? But yeah, that's how I see it, man. Like, you can't teach everybody. They just got to learn it. You know, they got to learn it. All right. So yeah, moving on. Yeah, real quick, let me take a look at this here. Let's talk about Valentina Shevchenko here. Just for a few minutes here, because I got a question for y'all here, really, in the comment section about the belt. Now, as y'all know, Valentina Shevchenko's got 7 title defenses. And, you know, she's looking for that 8th ruby, and that'll be filled up. So I remember some people saying that the belt will be filled up. But going by the picture of this belt here, is there another side where you fill up 8 more rubies here? Is that what that is on the right side there? Because on the left side over, because at the top, you see by her shoulder, that's where 8 rubies are, right? The 7 rubies are. And she's about to fill that one up. And so do you fill up the other side too to get 16? Is that how that goes? Because I was thinking that you only had 8 from what somebody said or told me once, that you get 8 and then you get a new belt to fill up. But it looks like in this picture here that you get 2 octagons on there, and you got to fill up 8 rubies on both of those. So, you know, you'll be you'll pretty much be Thanos if you get 16 on there, right? So that's what it looks like. But yeah, Valentina, man, she's that fighter that shows urgency, and she knows how to adapt in the fight. That's why you see her filling this belt. You see her about to fill this one side up here. You know, she's on to her eighth title defense coming up in a couple months, next month now, right? Look at all seven of those rubies. Ain't that pretty? You know, that's to kind of rub it in the face of these fighters that want to be champion, right? Somebody going to be able to stop that eighth ruby? Is Lex Grass going to be able to do that? I don't know. But, yeah, that's it right there. Look, seven of the rubies, right? You got – let's see. Let me see if I can name them off top without looking at anything, all right? I'm not looking at anything, but let's see. All right, first title defense you got – I'm not doing them in order. All right, you got Jessica Eye, Liz Carmouche, Caitlin Chikagan, Jessica Andrade. Let me try this again. Okay, you got. Okay, hold on, I'm blanking. Okay. You got Jessica Eye, Liz Carmouche, Caitlin Chikagan, Jennifer Maya, Jessica Andrade, Lauren Murphy, and Tyler Santos. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's it, right? So you got, you got I, Carmouche, Chikagan, Maya, Andrade, Murphy, and Santos. So that's all seven. Okay. So, yeah, and then you got Grasso. Pretty much everybody thinks that's going to be the eighth ruby, right? So, and you know what? That could be it, too. You know, Valentina probably said, you know, I want to get this eighth ruby. I want to get it nice and filled up and looking pretty. That's probably why she did go for that instead of the Santos rematch, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. I ain't trying to start nothing. But that could be one of the reasons, right? Like, why not go ahead? You know, you fought a lot of tough fights. You know, you did fight. Who was her toughest competition? You know, there weren't really that many tough fighters now. Like, they all earned it. But, man, like, I'm trying to think of her toughest title defense. Like, Joanna was the inaugural, you know, fight. That wasn't the actual title defense. Like, her toughest one would be Santos, and that's it, right? Lauren lasted four rounds, but that wasn't really a tough fight. Even Andrade didn't offer much. Maya lasted. Carmouche lasted, you know, mostly in survival mode. But, yeah, other than that, nah, like, you know. So maybe just to round it off, since she went this far and just been so dedicated, she said, you know what, let me get Grasso instead of Santos. Because she probably worried that that wasn't going to be that next ruby, right? I'm just messing. But, hey, it could be true. Could be true, right? And she earned it. Valentina earned it. I'm not saying she's choosing a easy path, you know. She's not choosing the easy path. That's on these fighters to make sure they prepare, right? That's to make sure they need to make sure they prepare to fight her. So that's what it is, man. So, yeah, again, yeah, you got that one right there that's going to be filled in. Then I guess you got that other side that's the next side she starts on. That's going to be starting into the new age of flyweights, you know. So, again, I think I said that right again. I'm being a little OCD right now. Like, I just like memorizing some of these things. Okay, you got I, Carmouche, Chikagan, Maya, Andrade, Murphy, and Santos. Okay, that's perfectly named there. Okay, and then Grasso's coming up. And then if she gets Grasso, she goes to the other side, right, and fills those rubies up, which would be moving on to some other fighters. Like, it could be a Santos rematch, Manone, Blanchfield, O'Neal, right? It's some of those fighters, okay? So she'll have gotten rid of all the older schools on that side and jumping into the new age here. Okay, all right. But, yeah, I just wanted to kind of look at that picture with y'all and ask y'all in the comment section. So, yeah, you have two sides of the rubies you have to fill up, right? That's what it's looking like. We'll see if Valentina can make it with the eighth ruby, and we'll see if she can get that other side filled up or even get one on the other side. Even tie with John Jones or catch up with Demetrius Johnson at some point, right? We'll see. All right? So, yeah, let's talk about Tyler Santos and Aaron Blanchfield a little bit. We got a fight coming up, and this the main event coming up next weekend. February 18th. Good fight. I think it's going to be a good fight. Still a little premature. I'm going to keep saying that. I do believe it's a little premature for Erin Blanchfield, but I think her confidence and her skill sets and knowing what she's up against is going to help her make this a good fight. But I know everybody's been talking about the jiu-jitsu. You know, y'all been asking me questions about who has better jiu-jitsu, you know, who's better grappler, who's better on the ground, and so on. And that's a discussion that, you know, is going to keep going because, you know, some people favor the technical jiu-jitsu, the sharpness of Erin, but some people like the combination of the MMA grappling, pure MMA grappling of Tyler, who knows how to mix it all together, right? Which is what I do like as well. But I was thinking about the possibility of this fight being like Dern, Jandaroba, Usman, Covington, where these fighters are great at what they do on the ground, like Dern, Jandaroba. Excellent jiu-jitsu from both fighters, very dangerous on the ground. And I'm not going to lie, I was waiting to see that happen when that fight was announced. I really wanted to see who was going to get the takedown first and then get submitted. I wanted to see Usman and Covington, you know, get down, see who was the better wrestler. But what happened in those situations when they respected each other too much, canceled out grappling, canceled out their jiu-jitsu, and they all chose to strike, right? So I'm kind of thinking that might be a situation here where, you know, Santos wants to avoid the jiu-jitsu if she's seen those submissions from Molly McCann. Not Molly McCann, but if she's seen that submission to Molly McCann by Erin Blanchfield. And Blanchfield might want to avoid the strength. So this might be a fight where we see these two fighters cancel their jiu-jitsu. They don't go for takedowns here. Like, you know, Santos might not want to be reckless and go in and try to take down Erin because, you know, Erin is strong. Erin is stronger than Blanchfield. Erin Blanchfield is stronger than Jillian Robertson. So she could have more success on the ground with her. She's sharper. She could be sharper than Valentina on the ground, in my opinion. I know people are going to hate on that, but, you know, I think Blanchfield is going to be in the – Blanchfield is going to be a little bit more calm and cool if Santos gets into the ground, I think so, even a little bit more so than Valentina was. Santos, she's gonna want to avoid that technical side. Erin's gonna want to avoid that physical side. So if they go to the striking, who's gonna have the better striking here? You know, who you think is gonna be the better striker? Well, I think I answered this question the other day, but when it comes down to the striking, man, I think that it is gonna be Santos's game on the feet, you know. We never know, but I just think that, yeah, Tyler Santos is the better striker. You know, she has nice straight punches, good body kicks like you see in this picture. But you see, hey, Erin ain't too far behind. She's working on hers, right? But, you know, Santos, you know, she has the Muay Thai background. She didn't really believe in it in the Valentina fight. But in some of her other fights, she will use her kicks. You know, she will use her jab. What was crazy was in that Mara Moreira-Barella fight, I believe going into that fight, I thought that Barella was going to be more of the striker and Tyler would have been the grappler. But it's kind of reversed. Like, Barella was taking her down and Santos was actually jabbing her and striking her. So, you know, Santos, you know, I think she definitely has good hands when she lets them go and good head kicks. Look at some of her early fights. You know, she's getting some good finishes. She has power. Even how she was breaking JoJo down with, you know, some good left hooks and body shots and even, you know, Roxanne Modafari. She hasn't stopped any of these fighters, but, you know, she has good power to get respect. So even if she's not going to finish you, I think she has enough pop to get the respect of Blanchfield. So if it stays on the feet, you know, I think Blanchfield probably will be in for some work. You know, she'll be the one having to initiate takedowns here, you know, because if they try to cancel each other out and just go for striking, you know, Santos could make it interesting here. You know, power, those straight shots, you know, against the spotty defense, striking defense of Blanchfield could be some problems. You know, she's going to go to the body, I believe. She's going to be throwing kicks like you see in this picture, you know, and mixing it up to the head. So yeah, Santos has a pretty good selection when she lets him go. Like, she lets him inside kicks on Valentina. You know, she did bruise up that side of the thigh. Valentina, I think, leaves on the outside, right? When she lets him go, there's power to it. You know, that's why I wanted to see her commit more to her striking. When she was cracking JoJo again, you know, she'll throw some nice, beautiful left hooks. Molly, you know, she was eating some of these hard power punches from Tyler Santos. You know, I think Tyler overall just, yeah, has a better stand-up game and she can measure range. And, you know, that was something I never really seen in Tyler, even in her early fights, that was very, very, like, primitive. You know, when there, it was never really, like, raw. Like, she really needed to work on from square one, like Mackenzie Dern's hands or something like that. You know, Tyler was already sharp like that because she was sharp before she came into the UFC. You know, Casey O'Neill, you know, she was one that's working on hers. But, yeah, like, you see her still needing a lot of advancement. But I think Tyler's hands, yeah, are much better. And it's on a level like that where you can say, okay, if she lets him go, she'll give even the champion problems next time around. Blanchfield, thing I like about her is, you know, when I was seeing like that rawness of her and like Invicta FC, she started working on it. Like even her kickboxing, you know, she's starting to become a little bit more comfortable throwing head kicks. You know, the way she set up that head kick on Victoria Leonardo was beautiful. You know, she was just, you know, kind of fainting with it. Then boom, the hit leg was up in the air. And I was like, damn, I didn't know she could do that. You know, there was the way she set it up. And even the way she was like using her jab in the Molly McCann fight, you know, she jabbed her way in on the boxer. You know, she backed the boxer up with the jab and, you know, got Molly to the cage, got the takedown. So even if Erin Blanchfield doesn't want to spend, like, the fight going strike for strike or trying to box with Santos, she can always use those different looks to strike her way in and sneak attack Santos and get her down, right? I know that'll surprise not only us, but it'll surprise Santos, you know what I mean? Like, that's how she can steal rounds. You know, Erin, you know, jab her way in, you know, land some good punches and then boom, get her down. So that striking level is still there. So she can, you know, do some things in here. I believe that striking is going to be, it's going to be needed in this type of fight, you know, definitely much more committed and willing to learn than Jillian Robertson has. Like, Erin ain't just jujitsu. You know, she's just not, I don't want people to get that confused. Like they say, oh, JJ Aldridge was beating her up or outworking her. Well, hey, she stayed in it, right? You see what she was able to do. She still came back. She still came back and won the fight, right? And she still, she was able to use her striking on Molly McCann before she got her to the ground completely, right? So I think Erin Blanchfield has understood that urgency of getting better as a striker, more so than Jillian. Like, Jillian still looks uncomfortable with hers. Montana De La Rosa, one reason she never advanced too is because she won't commit. Like, she can hit hard and she can throw a good jab, but she won't commit. See, Erin, you know, she say, I ain't just going here as a grappler. I know I got to get better in all departments. I'm going to strike too. So that's why, you know, this fight could be interesting here if Erin chooses to be a kickboxer in this fight. You know, Erin could be a little light on her feet in this one and, you know, stick that jab out. Erin doesn't have, like, this stubby range now. I don't know people thinking that she's going to be completely outsized and outskilled in this fight on the feet, but this is gonna be interesting, man. Like, let me look at Erin Blanchfield's stats here. Erin Blanchfield, I want to look at her reach. We'll use reliable Tapology. Hold on, Tapology is always give or take, so usually you gotta add 1 inch. Oh man, yeah. Erin is 5'4", and she's got a 68-inch reach. She got a 68-inch reach. That's pretty decent. And Tyler's 5'6". I believe she's like 5'7". She got a 68-inch reach, so she's tall, but they got about the same reach. So Blanchfield can, you know, be pumping that jab out in this fight. You know, she could use that jab to disrupt. You know, her jab has definitely looked better than, you know, like I said, fighters like Jillian Robertson. Like, Jillian seems to really have a problem, like, letting them hands go. That's one reason why she hasn't advanced. You see, Erin's been advanced because her hand game as well. You know, she's been getting better at everything. She's been building up good power, good skills on the feet to get fights to the ground and maul girls. Like, Miranda Mack was fighting well on the outside, but it was the pressure and the feints from Blanchfield that got Miranda to react. You go back and look at that fight. Like, I like how Blanchfield was putting pressure and closing the distance on Miranda Maverick, Miranda was letting her hands go, but she felt a little cagey. Like every time she was in her face, I got to let something go. I let something go, you know, because she's in my face, right? And when she would let hands go, Blanchfield would dip under and take her down, you know? So that could happen in this fight. You know, Blanchfield could say, I feel the need to put pressure on Santos and fight behind my jab and just stay in her face here and be out of range, use these feints. And then as soon as she reacts to something, because she's feeling cagey, get her down, right? So Blanchfield's been learning those little looks too that people don't understand. Like, that's why she's advancing. That is why she's advanced, because she understood that urgency of getting better as a striker, and she's adapted in this fight. So I still think Santos is much more polished striker, but you never know how Blanchfield can use that striking to her effect. Now, when it just goes striker versus striker in the fight, I believe Santos would win, but I think Aaron has enough striking IQ to disrupt Santos and turn this fight into like offbeat fight where she could steal it with takedowns or steal it with, you know, combinations or moving, you know, if she takes a page out of, you know, the early fights, like from, you know, from Valentina, even going back to Barella, you know, just the little habits she has to look at and make her react off her striking. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting, man. I think, yeah, Santos much better, you know, early on, you know, pure striking, Muay Thai, and she's stronger, a little bit more powerful. But let me know what y'all think in the comment section. I would like it if it turned out that way, but I want to see a mix, man. I want to see them both on the ground against each other. I want to see them on the feet. I want to see them fight a well-rounded battle. But if it turns into like a striking match, I would be surprised. It could be like Derringer and Nerobe, where they just go in there trying to outbox or out-kickbox each other. So we'll see. Yeah, let me know what y'all think, guys. So yeah, moving on here. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. Moving on here, I was just looking at Macy Barber's questions that she was asking. Well, not the questions she was asking, the questions that her fans ask. And somebody had asked the question, who did they ask who she wants to fight? Hold on. I'm gonna pull it up here on some IG if it's still up there. Because, you know, you can do the little ask a question, and I guess she was getting her long distance run, and she posted up some ask a questions, and a fan asked this question that I just want to quickly give y'all my thoughts on, because I thought it was funny. And I'll tell y'all how y'all feel about that here in a minute. All right, let's see. Macy Barber, ask a question. Okay, yeah, she was doing a long cardio session. So you type a question, okay? So somebody had asked, you versus Blanchfield, how does the fight end? And her answer is, who? With multiple question marks. Who? Honestly, the only fight I'm looking for after I beat KGB is a rematch against Alexa Grasso. All right? That's what Macy Barber has to say right now. And that's why I posted this picture up of her and Grasso. She said, they asked, you versus Blanchfield, how does the fight end? And she said, who? Honestly, the only fight I'm looking for after I beat Andrea Lee is a rematch against Alexa Grasso. Wow. The disrespect there, right? Boy, they got it going. I mean, hey, I like this kind of talk. I mean, it's not, it's the disrespect you like. You know what I mean? That's the type of disrespect you like in a fight game. But hey, I know who Aaron is. We know who Aaron is. Macy for sure better than who Aaron is, because Aaron is closer to fighting for that belt than she is right now. But anyways, she said this. So after this fight, she's looking to fight a rematch with Grasso. That's what she's eyeing. I thought she was eyeing a 115 return. You know, I thought she was eyeing the return to 115. You know, that would make more sense than trying to fight Grasso again, because you ain't going to get that fight now. You know, if Grasso wins or loses, I don't think she's going to be looking at a fight with Macy. I believe she more so even get a fight with Manon. Like, Grasso loses or wins against Valentina, she fight Manon next, I believe, or even fight Lauren Murphy. But I don't think Macy is in a position to call for a rematch right now, right? And I think we all know how a rematch would go anyways. you know, I think it would go the same way. You know, I think Macy has gotten better and stronger as a fighter, but so is Grasso. You know, so is Grasso. I believe Grasso is still on a bigger, higher level than her. And the one thing that always keeps her interesting in a fight would be her power factor. You know, her power factor and her three-round fighting ability. You know, her dog in her is going to always push the opponent, whoever the opponent is, she's in there. It'll always push the envelope when she's in there, you know. And that could be one way she could win a fight, being more physical and being more dog and going after Grasso. But I still think it would be the same, man. Like Grasso maybe learned from that, and she would probably say, you know what, I need to be a little bit more assertive, sit down on my punches, and commit to knocking her out this time around. And her boxing ability is still off the charts compared to Macy Barber, right? So, yeah, that would be a no-no for me. That's a fight I don't want to see right now, somewhere down the road. But, yeah, she got to understand that rematch ain't happening. If she want to rematch to a close fight, she need to go get Miranda Maverick her rematch. That's what we need. You know, rematches to me are for close fights and so on. You know, draws and close fights. You know, I think Alexa Grasso will beat her convincingly and move on from that. But she still got some unfinished business with Miranda Maverick, because I still think Miranda Maverick won that fight against her. All right. But yeah, that's what it is, man. I was just reading that and I was like, what? I was like, dang, I thought she was talking about moving down to 115. Now she's talking about trying to chase Alexa Grasso down. Alexa Grasso got her own problems coming up next month. Alexa Grasso is far from thinking of a Macy Barber fight. You know, she was on her path to get to the championship. And now Grasso is there. You think Grasso is really concerned about anything Macy Barber said in the rematch? No, I don't think so. Macy need to fight Andrea Lee, beat her, move down to strawweight if that's what she wants to do, or target somebody else, like Manon, maybe. You know, she beats Andrea Lee, come back in August or July. Manon versus Macy Barber. Or Arujo, you know what I mean? So any of those fights could be on the horizon, man. Those would be good fights. So, I just wanted to read that. I thought that was funny, man. Like, she was throwing that shot at Aaron again, like she don't know who she is. They're going to fight one day, man. They got to make that fight. They got to make that fight. The UFC needs to make that a main event at some point for a UFC fight night card. Blanchfield versus Barber. I'll take that as a 5-round main event for sure. Yeah, definitely. Maybe not this year, but maybe after a little bit more buildup or something off that fight. Hell, I mean, if they want to make it a main event this year, I'll take it somewhere towards the end of this year. Blanchfield Barber on like a UFC fight night card. 5 rounds, let's do it, man. I don't care what y'all say. Let's do it. All right. So last topic here, man. We only got one WMMA fight coming up this weekend for our, what is this, UFC 284. Hold on, let me pull up my doggone phone again. UFC 284, right? UFC 284. Let's see. UFC 284. UFC. Hold on. Wait a minute. Yeah, UFC 284, the Islam Volkanovski card. Yeah. So we got two unranked strawweights. Another unranked strawweight fight coming up between Elise Reed and Loma Labutny. This should be an interesting fight here. They both have a common opponent in Sam Hughes. Loma Labutny actually has a win over Sam Hughes. And Elise Reed has a stoppage loss to Sam Hughes, right? So you can kind of gauge where these fighters' strengths and weaknesses are when, you know, they kind of have a similar opponent here. I believe Elise Reed, her weakness is the ground, you know, she's susceptible to takedowns. I think she has a pretty good stand-up game. Sometimes gets a little overconfident, but I like her taekwondo. I like her footwork and I like her straight right hand. Kind of tricky with it. Definitely working on the ground though, but you know, I think that is one of her weaknesses that showed in that fight. Loma, I think hers is also the ground, but she's been working on that wrestling game in a couple of her fights. her clinch game is very powerful. You know, that's how she was able to stay one step ahead of Sam Hughes in her fight. Eventually, when Sam started to mix it in the jab and the straight punches, she started to, she started to trail a little bit, but it was a little too late. So Loma is actually able to win that fight. Going into this fight here, I think that Loma's been making a lot of good improvements. The one thing that just, you know, always takes away from her is her size, you know, and her hand game to me isn't like the best. You know, she throws great kicks, you know, powerful kicks, very authoritative with them. But, you know, I think she just kind of lacks sometimes with the mixture of hands and leg, hands and kicks. So going into a fight with somebody that has kind of tricky footwork at times, like Elise Reed, it could be an interesting fight early on. You know, I think that she's going to have to put a lot of pressure on her, on Reed, you know, attack the body and the legs to slow her down and get her in that Muay Thai clinch and bully. You know, she's got a bully. You know, she's a smaller fighter, but you got a bully here, because if you don't, I think Elise Reed will get into her groove and try to pick her apart from the outside. You know, she'll try to catch a leg or time the leg and counter with the right hand, kind of like how Asair Gobel was doing to Laura. You know, when Laura would throw the inside kick, she would time it and crack her with that right hand, you know? So I think that, you know, with the level both of these fighters are on and the urgency that they fight with, it's still going to wind up being kind of a 50-50 fight to me. You know, I know everybody thinks Loma has this in the bag, but if it was that easy to call, I think Loma would already be in the top 15, right? You know, like I said, Loma has some things that work against her, like her size. So you just never know how this is going to play out. And this is part of that Sam with the Sam Hughes triangle, you know, styles make fights. So to me, if I just go in and say Loma's going to destroy her, nah, like, that's not going to happen. Like, I think Elise Reed has enough tools in this fight, enough of an IQ on the feet to be comfortable against Loma and actually pick her apart, or she could falter under the pressure of Loma. So it's a 50-50 fight. Any of these unranked strawweight fights are 50-50 fights to me. You know, Loma, like 5'1", 61 and a half inch reach, okay? And she's going to be fighting the Taekwondo specialist here, you know, a good striker in there. So one that's about, they got to list at 5'3", but I think Elise Reed's at least like 5'4". 5'4", they got like a 63-inch reach. So you're looking at somebody that throws more hands and likes to move around. You know, she could make this a point fighting game and just stay on the outside. But in the pocket, it's going to get interesting. The pressure might get kind of rough for her. So it all depends on who shows urgency and adapts to the situation. I don't know. Y'all see how I played that topic back into the played that thing back into the topic right there, right? So that's what it is. If I had to pick, going into this fight, let me see. I'm gonna go with Elise Reed in this one, but not by much. Just because, like I said, on this level, it's kind of hard to really guarantee. I think Elise Reed has a little bit more going for it, you know, with the size and everything, and just striking mix up on the feet. Yeah, I'm gonna give her the edge, but that might change by Saturday. Okay, but that's what I got for this one. Yeah, that's what I got for this one. Let me know what y'all think in the comment section. Yeah. But that's about it for this episode, guys. Let me see. Yep, that was all the topics I had, about six. You know, it didn't seem that long. I ran through all six of them before I hit an hour. So, yeah, guys, let me know what y'all think in the comment section about everything I talked about. And I'll, you know, sometime do a video going a little bit more in depth on what I talk about in these episodes anyway. But, make sure you hit that like button, subscribe. Subscribe to this platform if you like WMMA. Appreciate the new subscribers as well. And subscribe to the show on all these other platforms. Like, wherever you listen to a podcast, like I said, you know what I'm talking about. You know, iTunes, Spotify, and all of that. Anywhere you go, you just type in my show, hashtag CB99Talks, and y'all can listen to it on the road. It ain't got to be on YouTube, right? But, yeah, like I said, things are looking up for me. You know, it's not all bad yet. It could be, but it's not. So, Friday, got to have a little something done, and I'll be home the same day. So after I'm home, you know, I'll be chilling Friday, but y'all will hear from me on the weekend, because I'm going to be chilling, recovering, And the weeks after that, I'm gonna be on light duty. And like I said, I do this because, you know, I like doing it, and I like to relieve stress by talking fights. Same as, you know, I was in the gym before, and, you know, sparring before and training. I always like to be associated with the fight game like that. You know, saying if I'm not doing it, I like to talk about it, and that's my way of just kind of relieving stress, whether it's boxing or whatever. You know, it's just a part of me, so I'll always work it in. It's not like work to me. Coming on here and doing videos, it's not like work to me. So if people think, oh, you need to rest. No, like, of course, there are times I have to take a week off, you know, just because, yeah, you do get burnt out doing anything, right? You do. You get burnt out doing things. But overall, you know, this is like, you know, working out and running to me too. You know, it's like, I like to get on and just talk. I like to get on and talk about something I feel like I'm educated in. And some of y'all are educated in, right? Like conversations. So, yeah, I'll be on and off. I will be on and off. Get my procedure done Friday, like I said. And that's the first step to what I got going on. Hopefully, it doesn't turn into a big thing. But, yeah, I appreciate the words of, you know, encouragement from some of y'all in the other video. Lolita, who else? I'm just thinking this off top that I remember. Lolita, Estrella, Gene Tidwell, Get With Candy. Yeah, I was just trying to remember some names here. But if anybody else, oh yeah, yeah, James Prez and Brian Williams. Thanks for sending me the email too. You know, Brian Williams sent me an email. You know, just telling me. Keeping prayers in this. I appreciate that, man. But yeah, for sure. But yeah, like I said, this is something to get done so something doesn't get worse or turn into something worse. Because yeah, like I said, I'm good. I'm fine right now. I'm 100%. I feel 100%. You know? So yeah, that's what it is, man. Like I said, just wanted to keep an update, keep y'all updated. Like if I was to disappear, that's why I would disappear, because it could go left. It could, you know, and I keep that in mind. But yeah, I appreciate that from y'all though. Yeah, I just keep on fighting. It's another fight. So that's why I look at it like, hey, I'm gonna just get up and do what I gotta do. You know, I just gotta get up and do what I gotta do and make it happen. And hopefully walk out with my hands raised, right? So yeah. I'll catch y'all in the next week, guys. But like always, Combo Breaker 99. I'm out. Subscribe. Peace.